travel changes you. At least it changes me. I've said that numerous times on this show. I have made traveling a priority for me and my family, and I get to do it usually once a year. We take some big trip. We just got back from Spain. And the great part about traveling is that it changes your perspective. I'm able to look objectively about the experiences that I'm having, where I go, why do I choose to go there, what happens during that. And obviously, I'm comparing them with my experiences back at home. What's happening that's different than what I have at home? What's better than what I have back at home? What is worse? And I like to come with takeaways and share them with you, because every time I travel, something resonates with me about how great it is the way we do it, or why we can do it and how we can do it better. I'm going to share my three key takeaways from my trip to Spain on today's episode of Restaurant Strategy. Don't go anywhere.
There's an old saying that goes something like this. You'll only find three kinds of people in the world: those who see, those who will never see, and those who can see when shown. This is Restaurant Strategy, a podcast with answers for anyone who's looking.
Thanks for tuning in. My name is Chip Close, and this is Restaurant Strategy, a podcast dedicated to helping you build a more profitable restaurant. Each week, I leverage my 20-plus years in the industry to help you build that more profitable and sustainable business. I also travel the country, travel the world, actually giving talks and keynotes at conferences, at conventions, at trade shows. I host a mastermind program where we get a whole bunch of restaurant owners together to help them pound through the profitability issues that they face. I also wrote a book. I wrote a book called The Restaurant Marketing Mindset. It's mercifully short, 208 pages. I think, don't quote me on it. It's very, very short and very, very tactical, very actionable. If you want to get that book for free, it's very simple. Just go to our handle on Instagram. So at Restaurant Strategy, that link will be in the show notes. Go there and send me a DM with the word book, literally just the word B-O-O-K. Then it'll start up an automation. The automation will send you a link where you can get that book for free. All you got to do is pay shipping. In addition to the free book, which you will get, we'll mail out to you, you'll also get free access for a month to our Restaurant Foundations program. This is our membership community. So you get access to an online course, to a resource bundle, a monthly Ask Me Anything session, and also a monthly masterclass. All of that is regularly priced at $97 a month, but you get it free for a month to check out. At the end of it, if you don't want to keep doing it, you just cancel. And if you want, obviously, I hope you'll stay as part of that community. It's an incredibly rich community, almost 200 people currently in the program now. The way to do that is to get started is to go to Instagram, go to our handle at Restaurant Strategy, and just DM us the word book, B-O-O-K. We'll send you out a free copy. You'll get free access to the Restaurant Foundations program. I hope that many of you guys do it. A bunch of you already have, which I love. If you haven't done it yet, now's your invite to do it. That link is in the show notes. So, Avi, when it comes to guest feedback, how do you recommend restaurants approach managing their reviews?
Yeah, so there are three things that we highly recommend, right? Number one, block out 30 minutes a week, one day a week, respond to reviews. While it would be nice to respond to all of them, focus on the 2, 3, and 4-star reviews, because that's where you're going to win people over and have room for improvement. Number two, create templates for yourself. Proven templates that you know work for 2, 3, 4, 5-star reviews. Save time. Number three, if you want to take it completely off your plate, come to Marquee. We have a wonderful managed review product where we will respond to all of your reviews as a true brand extension and take it completely off your plate.
And where can people go to learn more about Marquee?
Come visit us at marquee.com. That's M-A-R-Q-I-I.com. We look forward to chatting with you.
Okay, so I like to travel, but I didn't always travel, right? My wife and I made this a priority. We have set aside a part of our budget every single year to travel because it was something we really didn't do in our teens, 20s, and 30s. And as we approached 40, we said it's something we really want to do. As our young son was growing up, we said this is something we want him to experience. We wanted him to have a new perspective that we didn't really get growing up. And so we have made it a priority to travel just the three of us as much as we can. Usually that turns into one big trip every year. I've done episodes, I try to do episodes every single year when I come back from my trip, because there's things I learn, right? There's I'm able to be objective about the experiences I have. I bring perspective to the table, and my experiences abroad change me, shape how I look at the way we do things, specifically here in the United States. So I'm going to share my experience in Spain. Specifically, there were three key takeaways, and this is going to be a shorty episode. It's not long. It's not drawn out. I'm just going to hit these and then be done with it. But I hope that you will take this not as a dictum to do what I'm telling you to do, but just as a, let's just give some thought in these areas, okay? Three key takeaways. Here is my first one, right? Culturally, in Spain at least, it wasn't crucial to have a full back bar, right? By back bar, I mean at a bar. And here in the United States, you walk into any bar or any restaurant that has a bar, and there are all kinds of spirits, liquors, liqueurs, all back there, and they'll make you any kind of cocktail you want. And what struck me in Spain is that culturally, that wasn't the norm. There weren't often bars where you would go and sit and have a drink, or sit, have a drink and get food. And there wasn't a back bar with all these different liquors where they can make you any kind of cocktail you want. And I thought that was interesting. Obviously, traveling, you know, right? Like when in Rome, you do as the Romans. When in Spain, I did as the Spaniards. And they all have, a drink before lunch. So we went and had a vermouth. That was awesome. That was lovely to just sit around and sip on some vermouth before you go to lunch. They drink beer, they drink wine, and not really cocktails, not at least the way that we do them in the United States, not the way they do them in other parts of Europe. That struck me as interesting, unique. And again, I immerse myself when I travel, or I try to, and sort of like just do as they do. But it struck me as a huge opportunity they were maybe missing out on. And I'm sure there are reasons culturally or financially why they don't do it that way. But for all of those, for those of us who live in a country where this is the cultural norm, I would draw your attention to it, because this represents an incredible opportunity that people go out for a drink, or go to the bar to have a drink before dinner, or they sit down, they have a cocktail before they get wine, before they get beer. Right. And that's an incredible opportunity. If we are not focusing on getting people their cocktail before their bottle of wine, we're missing out on revenue. We're missing out on an opportunity to show people another way to wow them. Right. Another way to enjoy the experience. I always say that selling and serving are indelibly connected in our industry, because the way we serve people is to show them all the extraordinary things we have, all of the ways that we can make their meal better. One of the ways we do that better is to sell them things, is to serve them more things. And the way we take care of people is by making sure they have access to all of the great things that we do. A full back bar and the ability to make all these different cocktails seems to me, as an American, as an incredible opportunity to sell and to show people all that we can do. That was the first takeaway that dawned on me. And so if you have taken that for granted and you have a back bar, right? You have all these spirits and liquors just so that you can get people what they want when they ask for it, you are missing an incredible sales opportunity. That if you are not actively selling, pushing cocktails on first approach, when they begin the meal, you're missing out on an opportunity to wow people and an incredible opportunity to drive real revenue. Now, those of us that do this at a certain level know the opportunity, know the kind of revenue that can be generated by getting cocktails on first approach. But for everybody out there that takes this for granted, for me, I sat there and I went, man, I am never going to take this for granted ever again. Culturally, it wasn't crucial there, but for all of those of us that live in a country where it is culturally significant, man, don't waste that opportunity. That was my first takeaway. My second takeaway really had to do, and I'll frame this a little bit, I'll give you some context, really had to do with our time in San Sebastian. So we went to Spain, we did not do all of Spain. I do not like doing a day here and 2 days here and 2 days here and 3 days here. I do not need to see every little corner of a country, because when I go and I love it, I know I'll go back. So Spain is certainly one of those. where there's so many little corners to the country and so many different cultures and different in each of those different regions, right? To go to Madrid and Galicia and Barcelona and Valencia and San Sebastian, I'm just not interested. So on this particular trip, we flew in, we spent 4 days in Madrid, and then we took the train up to the northeast corner of the country, almost at the French border, to a little city called San Sebastian. San Sebastian is significant because it is a mecca for foodies. They have so many, I think I heard it's like more Michelin-starred restaurants per capita than anywhere else in the world. There's an incredible density of food and great food. They take great pride in the in sort of like the culinary landscape there. So we are driven by food, me and my family. Obviously, I do what I do, so that is where we decided to go. So 4 days in Madrid, then we got on a train and took that up to San Sebastian. And so we rented an Airbnb in Madrid and went all over and had great meals and got to see the palace and we went to the Prado Museum and all of that. We had a great time. Got on the train, went up, and we rented an Airbnb up in San Sebastian. Now, San Sebastian is a little city or a big town. Certainly, it struck me, caught me by surprise. I thought it was going to be much smaller than what it was, but it's really quite big. What's important about San Sebastian is two things, right? And we're gonna talk about both sides of these for my second and third takeaway. On the one side, there's all these fine dining restaurants, one, two, multiple three-star restaurants. And we're going to talk about that in a second. I'm going to talk about a specific piece to that experience because we dined at a two-star restaurant and a three-star restaurant when we were there, right? And I recognize I'm very fortunate to be able to do that financially, travel-wise. We budgeted for that because they were not cheap. We really enjoyed that. I'm going to talk about a specific angle of both of those meals in just a minute. That's my third takeaway. But the second takeaway, that's where we're at now, I want to talk about the other side, the other piece that is so significant about San Sebastian. San Sebastian is in the middle of Basque country. And in San Sebastian, right by this little peninsula, right off the beach, there's a little, I don't know, it's like 8 blocks by 8 blocks, right? Like so 8 square blocks, that's called Old Town. Old Town are these tiny little streets, and it's all these pincho bars. So pinchos are like small plates. So think tapas in other areas of Spain, but in the Basque country, they call them pinchos. Pinchos take all different forms. Usually they're served like on a little piece of bread or almost like a crostini. And there's different things on top. So anchovies, peppers, tomatoes, tuna, pork, all different things, right? And then sometimes they aren't served on the little piece of bread. Sometimes they're just a small little plate. There are hundreds of pincho bars serving thousands of people in this tiny little corner of the world. What was so interesting about this, what dawned on me, right, doing these, you're like bar hopping. There are all these places. There are many, there are a handful that are famous, right? And they're famous for certain things. So you're supposed to go to certain bars to get certain dishes that they're famous for. And then there are all these other places, some of them good and some of them sort of tourist traps. At the pincho bars, usually there's a huge display case where you can just literally point and pick and they put them on a plate and they give them to you. Other places you order and then they actually make them to order and bring them out to you. But a lot of these places are small, like little hole in the wall, like a little place that would seat maybe 8 people, but there are 25 people crammed in there. So it's definitely an experience. And so you get a glass of wine and a couple of small plates, you pay and then you eat. And the wine is like a little half glass often, and the plates are just a couple of bites. So if you're going with a couple of people, you're getting a bunch of stuff, you're sharing so you can try all this stuff. You get a glass of wine, you get a couple plates, you eat, and then you go on to the next place. And you get a glass of wine, you get a couple of small bites, you go on to the next place. Or you get a beer if you don't want a glass of wine. And you're literally going from bar to bar to bar to bar. And it dawned on me in doing this. Number one, it was a really fun way to do this. You didn't feel like you were sitting down getting like, you know, bloated from all this rich, heavy food. It was sort of cool to get out and stroll and then walk in some shops that were still open or just go into somewhere else and just get a, you know, drink, not necessarily something to eat. It was a cool way of doing it. And it struck me, right, that we have different areas of cities that have a lot of restaurants there. But culturally, I don't know that there's an equivalent. And somebody will probably correct me. I'm sure I'm wrong because I haven't been to that many places in the world. But these places, right, this place in the world, right, San Sebastian, Old Town, San Sebastian, reminded me of something that I feel like I've said a lot, and I want to remind all of you that there is a relationship between competition and collaboration. That in Old Town San Sebastian, all of these places were, yes, competing for dollars. They were competing with each other. And yet, none of them would succeed without the other. What made that part of town so interesting, so compelling, so unique, is that there were all these places right next to each other. It was the density of restaurants that made it succeed, that there was a relationship between competition and collaboration, that the whole reason it worked is because you go in, you get a glass of wine, you get a couple of bites, you pay, and you leave. You get a glass of wine, you get a couple of bites at the next place, you pay, and then you leave. You go into somewhere new. And most nights, people go to 3, 4, 5 places because they want to try the famous skewers here, the famous shrimp dish here, the famous foie gras dish over here, the famous Basque cheesecake over here. It dawned on me, number one, there's no place, at least in the United States that I can think of, that's quite like this, aside from like a food hall, which is different than this, right? It's different. That there's nowhere that I can think of where people just wander, right? Certainly there's French Quarter in New Orleans, right? Where people like go in, they have a drink, they wander, they drink while they're going to the next place. They go in, they drink. There's Broadway in Nashville. There are places. There's Restaurant Row in New York City. There's the Bowery in Lower Manhattan. Certainly there are places, but not like this. Not where culturally we just go in for a drink and a little bite. We go to the next place and get a drink and a little bite, right? So that was the one thing that, like, man, could there be? Should there be? How would we do that? I don't know. And to make it different than a food hall experience, because that is, I think, fundamentally different, right? The next thought, though, about this, again, as I will remind you, there was a relationship between competition and collaboration. And if you have competitors, it is in your best interest to start collaborating with them, meaning the other restaurants that are on your block, the other restaurants that are in your genre, that are part of the consideration set. Meaning, if you're in a town and there are just a handful of breweries or a handful of microbrews, I think it would behoove you to create a relationship with all those microbrews because you can be stronger. You can be stronger together. You can create some sort of passport program, some sort of like loyalty program among all of the places so that people don't go to just one. They don't pick their favorite, but they're going for the diversity of flavors, that they're going to go to this place, then this place, then this place, then this place. Again, in San Sebastian, what made it work was the fact that you weren't going just to one place. Most people couldn't get a seat. Now, I don't know, maybe had we gotten a seat at one of these places, we would have said, you know what, let's just stay put. This is so relaxing. Maybe. But the fun of it was wandering around town. The fun of it was getting the famous dish from 5 different places. There is a relationship between those two areas, between competition and collaboration. And whatever market you're in, whatever your concept, whatever your style of cuisine, whatever, I promise you, you will be better off if you can find a way to collaborate with those others. And I don't know how you do it, but I promise you, you know your people, you know your market better than anyone else. So I think it's a benefit to you to figure out how to do it. So those are my first two takeaways from my trip to Spain. The third takeaway, probably my favorite takeaway, in just a second after a word from another one of our sponsors. Now, are you a restaurant owner or maybe a restaurant manager struggling to keep your team motivated and satisfied? Well, look no further than this helpful new guide by 7 Chefs, What Restaurant Employees Want, the 2024 report. So the heartbeat of any successful restaurant lies in its people. But with the chaos of day-to-day operations, I know it's easy to lose sight of what truly matters, your team's happiness, your team's fulfillment. That's why 7 Chefs went straight to the source, surveying over 1,500 active restaurant employees across North America to uncover what truly fulfills them in their workplace. You want to know the secret to building a thriving team? Interested in reducing turnover? Want to boost morale? This comprehensive report by 7 Chefs has the answers you need. So don't let the stress of running a restaurant overshadow the importance of your team's well-being. Visit 7shifts.com/ccreport to grab your copy of What Restaurant Employees One, the 2024 report. Get that today. Invest in your team, invest in your success, and yes, you'll find that link in the show notes. Okay, now we're talking about my trip to Spain. My trip to Spain was very specific. I spent 4 days in Madrid, then I went up to San Sebastian. San Sebastian is in Basque Country. It's up in the northeast corner of the country, almost at the French border. It's a whole different culture. They literally have a whole different language up there. And what they're known for, number one, it's a food town. So there's Old Town, which has all these little pincho bars we just spoke about. And they're also known for all these fine dining restaurants. It really is like a mecca. Especially when El Bulli closed a couple of years ago, it created a bit of a vacuum. And now other restaurants have risen to the occasion. Of course, we have extraordinary restaurants all over the world. But in Spain, a lot of these chefs sort of dispersed, and that molecular gastronomy, all of that is still so embedded into the fine dining culture in Spain, all throughout Spain, and specifically in San Sebastian. They're known for a bunch of great restaurants. We went to two of them. Number one, the first one we went to was a two-star restaurant called Muguritz. Muguritz is known for being really unique, adventurous. Sometimes their dishes don't quite work. They're very ambitious. It's a very unique restaurant. I will talk about my experience there in just a second. That was the first really nice meal we went to. The other one was a 3-Michelin-starred restaurant called Martin Berasategui. And it was, both of these were just outside of town, about a 15-minute cab ride. The 3-star restaurant was over the top. It was extraordinary. And we did the tasting menu at both of them. We did the wine pairings at both of them because we just didn't want to think. We just thought, you know better than we do. We don't want anything to do with this. Just tell us how best to experience this. What's really important about this, and this gets to the heart of what I want to talk about, is that I went, my wife went, and our 9-year-old son went. Now, we've been traveling with him for the last 5 years. He is ambitious. He's an adventurous eater. He's a very good diner. He has had all different kinds of flavors, all different kinds of cuisines. He has been to a lot of different places. Again, we're very fortunate to be able to do that, but we've made it a priority. We set aside a portion of our budget every single year to travel, to go somewhere new, to try new things, to try new restaurants, new cuisines, and we're introducing him to that. It's really important that we go. And in both restaurants, at Muguritz, again, 2 Michelin stars, they're known for being really ambitious, very unique, and they only have the tasting menu. It's anywhere between like 20 and 27 courses every night. I think ours was like 22 or 23. And they're very unique in this particular year, and the menu changes every year. It changes throughout the season, but over the course of the year, they have a theme, they have an identity. And this year, pretty much everything was eaten with your hands. There were no utensils. There ended up being utensils for a couple of courses, but for the most part, you ate everything with your hands. And he thought that was hilarious and awesome. We thought it was fun. We had an extraordinary time. And not every dish worked. There were some dishes where it fell flat. The flavors didn't coalesce. But you know what? You knew what you were getting into. Like, we knew that because they're trying so hard to push boundaries and all of that, that some stuff wouldn't work. And there was stuff that definitely didn't work. But the stuff that did work was incredible. That's not what this is about. This is about my son's experience there. That, yes, I'm very fortunate to have a 9-year-old that is very adventurous, that is well-behaved, that can sit there for a 3-hour meal, that can have conversation and engage and all of that. But they treated him like a little prince. Every single person in there went above and beyond. And this is not unique to Spain. I will remind you, and I've talked about this in the past, when we went to Paris, my son got tours of the kitchen. My son got to meet the chef. When we went to Italy, we went to a 2-star restaurant there just outside of Sorrento. And they asked him to come, they gave him a chef's hat, and they asked him to come plate his entree. So when he got the pasta dish, they asked him to plate it. So he got to pour the sauce. He got to sprinkle the little basil and the parsley over top. Like who does that? Nobody in the United States. And he's dined at great places here in New York City, but no one here has done that. It's only in Europe, right? The way he was treated in Paris, the way he was treated in Italy, the way he was treated in London, and now the way he was treated in Spain was above and beyond. At the end of the meal, they brought him a gift. They brought him an apron, a child's brown apron. Muguritz, all the cooks and the chefs wear this this iconic brown apron. And so they brought him a brown apron with the logo across the front, and they asked him to put it on and come back. And then, did he want to see the kitchen and take a picture with the chef? Well, my wife and I tagged along because we asked to. So we all get to go back there. We all get to see the kitchen. We all get to meet the chef and take pictures. But he got the gift. We didn't get the gift. We didn't get, there was no takeaway gift. There was nothing special. My son got it. And that's really crucial to acknowledge. My son got it. They recognized, man, here's a kid who could be a lifelong diner who's falling in love with this restaurant and all restaurants. And if we continue to foster that, even if he doesn't go into the industry, he will partake in the industry and he will be a very good diner for the rest of his years. So that was the first place we went, the two-star restaurant, Muguriz. We went and had an extraordinary meal, and my son was given the gift. My son was invited back to the kitchen. I had to ask if I could come back and see the kitchen as well, right? And they didn't know who I was. I flew under the radar. I was anonymous, which is great. It's exactly what I want. Now, when we went to this three-star restaurant, where we do the tasting menu again, and he's having an extraordinary time. They're taking such good care of us. And at a certain point, maybe five courses into the 15 courses, the chef is coming out. The chef comes out and shakes hands with everybody in the dining room, is touching tables. And he gets to our table and sees my son. And my son went to stand up. And I asked, oh, can I take a picture? And he said, oh, yeah, we'll do a picture with everybody. I said, no, really just with my son. So the chef took a picture with my son. It was amazing. And he was over the moon. I mean, you should see the look in his eye. It was like he just met Michael Jordan. He was so over the moon by it. And they sat back down and we had the next course. And then a few minutes later, the captain came out and says, can you write down your son's name? And so my wife did, wrote it down on a little post-it note. They took it back in. Well, three courses later, chef comes out again and brings one of his chef's coats. Signed, Ami Gran Amigo, and the date, and then his signature, and gave it to him as a gift, and then asked to take another picture with him. And so they're sitting there holding his chef's coat while they took a picture. It was unbelievable. We go on, we get to the end. Our captain comes back and says, chef wants to know if the young man would like to come back and see the kitchen. He would like to show him around. I looked up again. I said, can I go back too? So all three of us went back there, but I didn't get the invite. My son got the invite. They took us back there, and there's an army of cooks there preparing the last few courses for the evening, because again, we had been there all night long. It was close to the end. And again, chef took a picture with my son. That's how you make an impression, not just for my son. Yes, my son is still talking about this. It made an impression on him, but it made an impression on us. Number one, it kept him engaged over the three-hour meal so we could continue to enjoy it, right? And it makes it easier for us to be able to do this again down the line because they're taking such good care of him. And again, it strikes me as something we just don't do here in the United States. That kids are considered a nuisance. Now, maybe because they're noisy, they're unruly, they're picky eaters, they won't eat what's on the menu, they require special attention. But man, if we could just show them the respect they deserve and go above and beyond in the true definition, the true spirit of hospitality, if we could do things to make their experience there special, I promise you, they would come back. Now, I'll give you one example for one of my clients. One of my members of my P3 mastermind ended up getting these little gelato carts made. So instead of having ice cream on the menu, they have a gelato cart, which is great because instead of a $9 dessert, he sells a $39 dessert. And it looks like a little gelato cart with all these different flavors in there and sprinkles and whipped cream and cherries and chocolate sauce. And he brings the cart, it literally sits on top of the table, and people make their own. The kids make their own. They've got cones or cups. The kids are involved. It's tactile. It's fun. Not only is it delicious, but it's fun and it's unique. And guess what? And the kids are going to ask later, next weekend, 2 weeks from now, when mom and dad say, hey, we're going to go out to dinner. And they say, oh, can we go to that place with the gelato cart? Where they bring the little gelato cart to the table and we get to make our own ice cream? That's how you get more business. Because if the kids are going to go somewhere where they're going to have to be well-behaved, okay, we can get the gelato cart, but you have to be well-behaved the entire meal. That's how we manifest this thing. But you have to want it. You have to be aware of it. So those are my three takeaways from my trip to Spain. I hope some of this resonates with you, and I don't want to dictate how you have to put this into practice. I just know you will benefit by putting it into practice. So that's that. As always, I want to thank our sponsors for their support. I want to thank all of you guys for carving time out of your day. One last thing, a reminder, if you want a free copy of my book, you just pay shipping. You also get free access to my Restaurant Foundations program. The way you do that is by going to Instagram, go to our handle, at Restaurant Strategy, and DM us the word book, B-O-O-K. That's it. We have an automation set up. It will send you the link automatically to go get your copy. The Restaurant Marketing Mindset is a book that was released almost a year ago. I'm still incredibly proud of this. And if you haven't read it, if you don't have it, I want you to go get it. Again, thank you for being here, and I will see you next time.